This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad, and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
This is Houston Huddleston from New Starship, and I'm restoring the Enterprise D bridge, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Tea, Earl Grey, hot.
It's time for another serving of Earl Grey, Trek FM's dedicated TNG show. I'm Daniel Prue, sitting in the center chair this week, and joining me, as always, are my favorite co-hosts. We have Philip Gilfus, who is Chief Bar Architect. Philip, what exactly was your inspiration for 10 Forward?
Well, I was given the name 10 Forward, and I was thinking about putting it on Deck 12 in the back, but I decided to go more literal, and, you know, whatever. So I went with that, and I'm really going for something that, you know, any good designer basically designs around an object. And so I have this glass of prune juice that I just sat in the middle there and sort of just designed around that. So I think that's kind of the colors and the accents and the feelings that I'm really going for. I mean, after all, it is a warrior's drink.
So you didn't design you 10 Forward with any Andorian fight scenes in mind?
Yeah, I mean, we really don't serve that many Andorians here. I mean, we got this one, but they had this really huge head. They may have had some sort of tumor issue. I don't know. But that was really the only one I've ever seen around here.
All right. And also joining us, as always, we have Interim Medical Chief Medical Officer Darren Moser. Darren, I hate to sound mean, but we have Nurse Ogawa. Why do we need you?
Well, if I wasn't here as the Chief Intern Medical Officer, then she wouldn't be Nurse Ogawa. She would be instantly promoted, and you wouldn't get to call her Nurse Ogawa. And that changes everything. I mean, when you put certain people in positions of authority, it makes it harder for you to form a fan base around them. Don't you realize these things, Daniel? So I'm here to keep Nurse Ogawa, although I don't know. I'm not sure if I'm going to be sticking around much longer than maybe 20 days, maybe 21.
All right, fair enough. So what you're saying is, to keep it topical, because that's what we do here on Earl Grey, this is the same reason that even after saving the world on multiple occasions, Captain America never gets promoted.
Yeah, it's, you know, Admiral America just doesn't quite have the same ring. And I know I'm mixing my Philip's eyes are rolling through the screen at me, but
well, Badmiral America, I mean, you know, yeah,
nobody wants that. And especially if you've seen the latest Captain America, he doesn't need a promotion because he just
spoilers. All right. Well, if you know, any of our listeners or potential viewers can't tell what we're talking about this week, I guess it must have been months ago at this point, Philip hosted a show about kind of outlining season one, and I thought I would kind of continue with that tradition. We would talk about season two. No justice in this episode, Philip, unfortunately. So season two is kind of in a weird position, right? In TNG land, I think a lot of times season one and two are kind of clumped together, which is really interesting because they're very different. But really, I think the reason that we do that is because season three kind of starts TNG how most people remember it and where it really got its feet and when it took off. But season one and two are very different beasts. So obviously, as you know, as a lot of our listeners, I'm sure, are aware, but some may not be, there was a writer's strike in 1988, which caused the, maybe you could say, mediocrity of season two, if not worse than that, and also the shortened length of season two. It only has 22 episodes. It's the only season in TNG that doesn't go for the full run. So, Philip, what do you think of season two? Just your quick overall impressions. I mean, I know you are the big defender of season one here, so truly, if anybody could find the silver lining in season two, it, you know, in all of the shades of gray of season two, it must be you.
Well, I think there are some colors to be found in this season. I mean, you have to go up a long something you would climb, but I think you can find them. Yes, and I will say the same thing. I mean, you know, we said the same thing during season one overview, but I'll say the same thing here. You know, watching it live in the 90s, and then, you know, throughout my kind of Trek fandom, I always thought, like, oh, any of the seasons without a collar are just not worth watching. You know, they had the weirdo doctor, season two, you know, blah, blah, blah. Season three onward, that's all I care about. You know, anything after Best of Both Worlds was good. But when I did my rewatch, I mean, I think this is a very, in my opinion, extreme season. Because I think there are a lot of good episodes. I think maybe there's like four to five. Okay, not bad. Just okay, you know, standard fare. And then there's just two to three clunkers. But then again, every season has two to three clunkers. So I would definitely champion season two just as I would champion season one, that if you don't watch season two, you're missing a lot in The Next Generation land and in Star Trek too.
Well, fair enough. You do sound a little more optimistic than I am about the season. Where do you fall, Darren? Are you more like Philip, or, you know, looking at things maybe with the TNG lens, or like me in Deep Space Nine here and kind of pessimistic about the situation?
What would be the measure of a season?
Oh, the puns just keep coming. No, I think upon looking at it, there are a lot of great episodes in this season. And I would, like Philip said, I would hate for someone to pass it by just because they don't like Pulaski, or they felt the clip show at the end just kind of nicks the whole season. But yeah, but there's, you know, I'm taking a bit from what I've discussed with Philip earlier today. It deals in absolutes. You have some great, great episodes, and you have some absolutely terrible episodes. And it's hard to see the middle ground through that. But, you know, maybe as we go, we'll probably start changing each other's opinions about, you know, where our highs and lows are in this season. But it I have heard it said, though, that season two, though, establishes a lot for going forward in Star Trek The Next Generation, though. You get Guinan, you get a lot of good characters, you get more sets, you get more focus on kind of the Picard, Data, Riker triangle, and everyone else kind of shifts into more of like a background role. You get Worf and Geordi switching to Gold, you know, operations. So you get a lot of changes from season one to two. So it's definitely a time of change.
And you get the conception of Daniel's favorite character in season two.
Oh, yes. Right, Daniel?
Literally.
On the holodeck.
I was like, I don't think the Bajorans are in this season. Are you talking about Ro? What are we talking about here? I see what you're saying. Yeah, no, not at all. Although we do get to see Kalar.
Yes.
Thank you. Who I do love, obviously. Because, you know, by day she's Kalar, by night she's Dr. Salar. So, you know, she's kind of got the crime fighting thing going for her.
Crime?
Kalar, of course. I guess it would be, then she would be Kalar at night.
Well, or there'd be the mild manner Dr. Salar in sick bay.
Exactly. And their names rhyme. How did we not see it?
That's how you know.
Kind of like Lois. Under attack. Wait, like, where's Dr. Salar? She's never around during these red alerts.
You know, kind of like Lois Lane is often lampooned for not being able to see past a pair of glasses. The rest of the crew cannot see past a pair of Vulcan ears. They just, come on now, it's the same person. It's really not that difficult. But, you know, as far as season two is concerned, you know, I'm a little, like I said, a little more negative on it than you guys are. I definitely think there's way more misses than hits, and I think a lot of it is, of course, like I said, like we mentioned, is due to the writer strike. But another thing, for some reason in my mind, and I don't know if this is true or not, but when I consider season two, I always think it's the darkest season, not like thematically, but
are they near a sun?
Visually.
Is there some shadow? Because
I don't know why.
One of the characters does have facial hair, so it could be the darkest timeline.
Oh yes, we will with the darkest timeline. That's right. So in fact, let's move on to that. So we get a fair number of changes in season two, pretty significant changes. In the first episode, the child, which is pretty much all we'll say about that. We get two new characters. We get Guinan and Dr. Catherine Pulaski. So, okay, let's go. Philip, what do you think of these two characters? Obviously, it's two separate subjects, but, you know, elaborate. Who's not a Guinan fan, and how do you feel about Pulaski?
Well, I would certainly point our viewers and listeners to our Dr. Pulaski episode character profile we did for further remarks. Hopefully, we'll link that in the show notes. But I think, so I won't repeat everything. My short Pulaski, I'll just say, is she had a very, very harsh introduction, both literally and figuratively. but I think, unfortunately, too late. I think she got better, or they delved into her character. Like, she only has, like, there's one Pulaski episode, The Deadly Years. Like, that's the Pulaski
episode. Where it's her focus, you mean?
Yeah. And then I think she did well in peak performance and kind of repaired that data relationship, but that's it for Pulaski. For Guinan, I mean, come on now, who doesn't, like you said, who doesn't love Guinan? And so, but it was a very interesting introduction that we're going to have like this gathering bar here on the Enterprise, and we're going to just have this civilian bartender, you know, like this is Cheers or something, or, you know, that we just have this non-Starfleet person that's just going to be this focus. And, you know, you know, what do you call a person who listens to people's problems and helps them go through it?
A listener?
Bartender, right?
Yeah, bartender. Yeah, that's it.
I mean, counselor. One. Wait, so. No. I'm so confused.
Now, and I know I'm probably stealing thunder, but I do want to... One thing that we also get, Worf's new sash, right? Because he had that old one in season one.
And his new
one.
Forehead.
And right. So not only... Yeah, a new forehead. Wesley gets an updated look. He's now in that gray jumpsuit, because remember, he was just sort of look like a, you know, the sweater.
Which never, ever, ever fits him. It can never zip up in the back, which always bothers me so much.
And he has a special communicator that's just completely gray for some reason.
It's a foreshadow to the last episode, obviously, Philip.
Yes. Well, yes, there, it was a different show. And then two quick appearances. Troy kind of gets a new look as well. She gets that, which we take it, you know, take it for granted, but that's the first time she really wears that purple, you know,
dress,
catsuit, whatever you want to call it.
Dress is not really
no, she wears the dress, comes later. And then O'Brien is actually in gold too for season two.
That's true,
because remember, he was right, just in red in season one. So just a lot of changes, like you said. So those are all the ones I noted.
What about you, Darren? How do you feel about these new characters, these new aspects? We didn't even mention Riker's beard yet. Go ahead. What do you
Riker's
think?
Beard.
I just read his own topic.
He's my favorite new character is Riker's beard. but no, I think, yeah, I've kind of stated, you know, some of the other things that were added that were, you know, pretty awesome. But I think it's also really cool. We finally get a solid, you know, chief engineer. I mean, you know, Picard didn't even bother really learning the names of the other ones. So maybe it was just a bad work environment, but,
well, Darren, once you name them, you have to start caring, and Picard knew.
I get the feeling, though,
just break his heart,
that Geordi kind of had to write a little bit of his own job description. You know, he kind of feels like one of these people. He's like, okay, yeah, I'm going to be, I'm going to be the chief engineer, and oh man, this safety is terrible. We need some doors that can come down really fast. And you know what, guys? I need a station in the back of the bridge because I miss you guys, and I don't want to be relegated to the chief engineering. You know, I need my own office, although they won't even let me put up a picture of my best friend Data. You know, it's like, they're really strict about their cubicle space down in main engineering. But
he didn't have a holographic photo of his girlfriend?
Never mind.
But Data, your Starfleet records didn't say you were an android. How was I supposed to know?
Well,
but one thing I just connected that I didn't even think about before was Argyle disappears as soon as there's a bar installed on the Enterprise. I mean, I don't want to be stereotypical, but I guess
that are you saying he's sense, dead right? in a Jeffries tube somewhere, passed out from
maybe not dead, but certainly
are you saying don't look underneath that bar where Guinan keeps all her weaponry?
That's exactly
well, I don't right. know. I mean, they killed a character in season one. You know, maybe he was the character we just didn't see it happening that died in season two.
So do you think that Data, there's an alternate scene in Measure of a Man where instead of the little holographic Troy, they pull out a little holographic
Argyle.
Chief Engineer Argyle, and Data really has the feels for him as well. And it's
well,
really,
hold on. Daniel, I know you have retconned the character that never existed, but that was Yar. Yar was a character.
Oh.
Yar existed.
Right. Right. Who? She's not in this. She's not in this season, right? I mean, I don't remember seeing her. But okay, come on, guys. I brought it up. We haven't talked at all about Riker's beard. This is the turning point for the show.
Okay, Riker's beard. Well, I mean, it does give him a rather stoic look. I think. You know, I mean, a lot of people say, you know, getting the beard is like opposite of jumping the shark. It's when everything starts going good. And yeah, I mean, everyone, or not everyone, but most people know the story of Jonathan Frakes didn't really like shaving and he was kind of lazy and he came back and, with a beard after, you know, the hiatus, and they're like, hey, keep it. And it stayed ever since all the way up to Nemesis. Yeah,
Roddenberry said it looked very naval or whatever. So
yeah, very, very nautical, very nautical.
And it's funny because there's like, even if you're looking at, you know, Riker from season two versus the rest of the bearded Rikers, there's like maybe a 20 to 30 pound difference. So you can definitely tell season two Riker apart from the rest
like
of the
beard
Rikers.
Or his actual weight.
No, I meant the actual Riker. He's like, because, you know, in season one, he's very fit. And in season two, I think he's still mostly fit and then has the beard. He's not as full. He's not as
much
know,
of a man as he is.
Yeah,
in
he's
Enterprise,
not as barrel chested.
Voyages,
yeah.
Where exactly. He can't even fit into Archer's ready room.
Oh, come on.
They made the ships a lot smaller back then.
That's what keep telling that to yourself, Will. Keep telling that to yourself.
We love you, Jonathan Frakes. Please come on the show.
Well, Data also had a beard in season two. The Schizoid Man.
Oh, man.
Was Data's beard episode.
Yes, Data's beard episode. But it didn't really work. Yes, eventually Geordi would have a beard. Picard would even have, you know, a bit of a, true, you know, facial hair. So everyone, you know, well, every male character at least gets
except Wesley.
A little something. Except Wesley. Even old, you know, futurized by Q version doesn't have any facial hair. I mean, what's up with that?
But a lot of steroid use for some reason. I don't know what that's all about.
Yeah, one way we can tell that Q actually isn't all powerful is he was a little off base with the older Will Wheaton. That's for sure.
I guess the real Will Wheaton makes up for it by having an awesome beard nowadays in real life. So that balances it out.
We love you, Will Wheaton. Please come on the show. okay, so let's talk now. You know, we brought up Data, and the next topic I wanted to talk about is highlights of season. You know, episode highlights of season two.
I prepared a short list.
Oh, wait. I thought this was the magazine. I was going to talk about Goofus and Gallant. Oh, I was so confused.
These two pictures are slightly different. Can you tell? Well, this one, the Enterprise is separated, and this one, it's obviously joined together.
Wait, Riker doesn't have a beard in this one. Hey.
Wait a minute.
It's just the cast photos of the two seasons.
Who is this blonde woman?
Wait, did she turn into like the one with the hat? What is going on?
She doesn't have red hair.
Well, okay, since I'm going first and I'm in charge
right
now.
Yeah, why don't you start?
I'm just going to bring up the obvious ones, the ones that were used when the season two Blu-rays were coming out. Obviously, Measure of a Man and Q-Who? That's the right one, right? Q-Who? Those Q.
You're so bad on the Borg title.
The Q episodes.
You can't remember the Q ones.
Yes, of course, Measure of a Man, super important episode, super wonderful, like one of the best.
You mean the Measure of a Man?
Yes, of course. the Measure of a Man. You know, widely regarded as one of the greatest TNG episodes, and you know, certainly better than Justice, without a doubt. Important episode too, right? Like we tackled right in the I think it was mid season two, it might have been later season two. We tackled this idea of where are we going to go with Data? Is Data a person? I mean, could we create an entire race of slave people? I'm not saying that. I'm just suggesting it. You know, what do you
I'm
guys
just
think
repeating
of this
what others said. I'm not a racist.
Well, I mean, one of the awesome things about the Measure of Man episode, if anyone has gotten the Blu-ray edition, because it has that extended Measure of Man, like I think it's maybe 10, 15 extra minutes, maybe even 20, but it adds a couple extra scenes and it definitely draws it together. Thank you to Greg M for bringing that to my attention in our comments. But
do they have that song? Am I a man or am I an android?
Man, we just have to sing in every episode now, don't we? We need to make a greatest hits. Yes, they do. They do have that song, and it replaced the closing credits music.
I'm glad that was brought up though, because I may get the details about this wrong, but I went to see that in the theaters, and they had the extended version, and there's a scene that was cut, and I really wish it was in the episode where they're all gathered together for Data's going away party, and Jerky McJerkson, Lieutenant Jerky Face, whatever his name is,
the blue shirt.
Yeah, come on, you guys can do this. We can do this.
Commander Maddox,
thank you. Yep. Yeah. He comes in and is just being a big jerky jerk to everyone, and I think it's Riker that's like, you need to get out of here, and it's like really defensive of Data, and it's really a sweet moment, and I was really thankful that they were able to restore those scenes and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that was already a great scene with the presence, but they adding that extra bit, you know, made it just, you know, hey, character growth. Riker, who at first saw, you know, Data as nothing more than Pinocchio, now is defending his friend against certain disassembly. Is your mic broken, Phil? You're whistling.
How you humans do that so easily.
Well, and I don't want to go off the Measure of the Man, but just kind of Data character in season two, you know, couple this with Elementary Dear Data, where there's a lot of things going on in that episode, but you still have some more expansion of Data, you know, being challenged, and you kind of get to see the initial bromance start to, I mean, which is already there, but with Geordi and all that stuff, and the Schizoid Man, another good Data-esque episode. Yeah. I mean, technically Data's not in it a lot, quote unquote, because his quote unquote grandfather. But anyway, but you know, there's a lot of good Data development here in season two, which you had already said, Daniel.
Yeah, one I listed in my short list is the third episode, Elementary Dear Data, and you get, you know, I guess it's half a Pulaski episode. It probably would have been Troy or someone else. Let's just be honest, if she hadn't been added to the cast. But, you know, this is the infamous Next Generation believing that Sherlock Holmes was in the public domain, which it was not. And so they kind of just made an episode about it and then kind of, you know, asked for forgiveness later as Sir Arthur Conan Doyle estate was kind of peeved. But I love this episode because, you know, it's our characters having fun in the holodeck. It's hard to get bored on the ship when you can, you know, be, you know, Sherlock and Watson and, you know, and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun seeing Geordi and Data interact in a non-work environment and a non-work environment that's not 10 forward, because it's where everybody seems to go. And it's nice to see a little bit of variety.
Yeah. And also, we get, Professor Moriarty, who shows up again in season five or season six, and another great episode.
Great character.
Yeah.
In the part where Data faked his death on the roof, I mean, I was really guessing how that was going to end. the whole time. And they never really
assumed he was going to live because we've seen him jump from the top to the bottom of a missile silo and survive. So I'm pretty sure he can survive jumping off a two-story building. So I wasn't really that worried. I'm just saying.
That's true. So what else? I mean, okay, so we talked a little bit about Measure of Man. We mentioned Q-Who. Now, Elementary, My Dear Data, do you guys have any other episodes that you want to throw in there?
There's the big one that it was the first time we met. The first episode we ever talked about. A Matter of Honor.
The Ready Room 111, Bird of Prey Selfies.
That's right. A Matter of Honor, which is probably, I don't know. See, I would, and I'm probably, you know, send your hate mail here. Probably better to me than A Measure of Man, because I like Measure of Man, but I think Matter of Honor is better. And then you have Q-Who, so I think those are the top
you
three.
You heard it here, folks. Exactly. Disrupting the Star Trek continuum, Philip Gilfus states.
But, you know, for those who can't remember, Matter of Honor is when Riker gets, assigned in the exchange program where he has to go live.
The prisoner exchange, right? I mean,
he lives with a host family. It's pretty cool. No, it's about the Klingon ship. He is the first officer of the Pach, if I remember correctly. And I don't know, there's so much great stuff. And within, I think, was it 30 minutes, he's already picking up ladies? So, pretty, you know.
Well, one soon. Or both.
Exactly.
Yeah. He's picking them both up.
I mean, even though we had, what was the first? Heart of Glory. In season one, that was sort of the first Klingon episode, which was meh. But Code of Honor really expands on, like, Gach is introduced for the first time in season two.
Yeah.
And we just get this huge expansion. And then we get the Emissary, which we'll talk about in a second. But I mean, it's Code of Honor is a great, or excuse me. Yeah. Matter of Honor. Because Code of Honor is a terrible episode. The Matter of Honor is a great episode and fairly early in the season.
Well, and one that I really like is Loud as a Whisper. I mean, it's a bit of a different episode, but one of the things I was reading a great article on it today, and I'm blanking on who wrote that. Gosh, now I feel terrible. But I'll put that in the show notes. But it really had a good point. I don't think I realized when I first watched it that the actor who played haven't done my research.
I'm blanking on the name, something like that.
Yeah, but he's the main ambassador, the main negotiator. Yeah. Reba. The actor who plays that, yeah, he actually was a big proponent in the creation of the episode. He basically wrote into the studio and said, like, hey, like, I think we really need to develop an episode that focuses on, you know, on deaf people and that interacting in society. And he basically, that part was tailor written for him, and he acts in it so well, but it's also, you know, a great Troy episode. I mean, she really gets to do what she's been trained to do, to be a counselor. I mean, I can't see him going to Guinan's bar to get information or to get some, you know, consolation.
Well, as a listener, I don't think there's a lot she can probably do, but anyway, I mean, because I think I wrote down for the notes that my notes there was that it was a little overacting, and then the aliens on the planet look kind of, you know, rushed in their makeup. But I think overall, I agree with you, though. I mean, I think overall, it is a quality definitely a good episode to watch.
It is also the only reason this one, it's not my favorite, but it sticks in my mind because there is this scene where all of his buddies, like, that represent his different, his chorus that represent his different, you know, aspects of personality, get essentially vaporized, and it's actually
vaporized.
It reminds me a lot of we don't get that very often in Star Trek, and it's like the season two conspiracy where, like, we get this kind of gore that Star Trek doesn't do very often, and I remember being like, whoa, like, they just got exploded.
Am I allowed to watch this? Yeah. And I think another episode that I kind of wrote down that I just mentioned already, but I'll mention again, The Emissary, because this, again, introduces Kalar. And we get to see a nice old Klingon ship. And, And you know, there's probably not a lot of plot per se. I mean, it is more character about Worf. But again, Worf in season one was kind of like, stand back here and look Klingon the whole season. But this is sort of one of his few episodes because, you know, this is way before, you know, Redemption and Birthright and any of those, you know, huge Klingon episodes we get all the time by Ron Moore and all that stuff. But this is really kind of the first one that, you know, other than Heart of Glory, which was, in season one. But the Emissary, you know, really get a really history of, well, not history, but character development of Worf and Kalar. And there is some continuity that happens because of what happens in season two.
Seasonal continuity?
It extends all the way to Deep Space Nine.
No, but this is not the good type of continuity, Philip. This is the kind you want to forget that you maybe wish was abandoned, if you will.
Not only continuity, but consequences. So kids,
yes.
Take it from your Uncle Philip. You roll around in the holodeck with Skeletor, and you're going to have to live with that for the next 18 years. So
just remember, there's literally no difference between actually using the holograms. There's no reason that... Anyways, it doesn't matter. The two episodes that I wanted to mention, real quick, we don't have to go in depth, but I actually really like the episode Peak Performance. I think it's a fun episode.
I agree.
I love that one.
It's cool that we get to see these, you know, these war games, and we get to see like Riker versus Picard in, you know, in a really interesting way. And the other episode I wanted to bring up was, of course, Samaritan's Snare, because it gives us possibly the most compelling aliens in all of Star Trek. Of course, I'm talking about the Pakleds, right? Because
how do you define most compelling?
Well, because they look for things.
Okay.
Things that make them go.
No, I understand the concept. I'm just trying to piece it together.
No, I'm being sarcastic, of course, but I do actually think that's a very good episode.
Yeah, with the Samaritan Snare, I mean, because I was looking through my old tweets as I retweet my rewatch and for this one, and I think I still believe it. I think I have a problem. I think my favorite part of the Samaritan Snare is actually the Picard-Wesley storyline, because for those who don't remember, Picard has to go get his, you know, heart valve, you know, every 10,000 miles checkup, I guess, artificial heart or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so he has to go to a shuttle with Wesley, and, you know, he starts to open up to Wesley, talks about his past.
Wait,
he
actually gives the USS Hood story. Just right there, ready to pick him up. I mean, of all the times for it to be called away.
Would you like a sandwich?
but it's funny because the story he tells in season two becomes its own episode, Tapestry. You know, so the seeds get planted a lot. You know, you get to see Pulaski save his life at the end because she was the only doctor in the quadrant. But I think the Pakleds, you know, and this was my tweet when I was, is that I almost feel sorry for the way they're portrayed, because to me it almost crosses the line between look at this bad and then like, I feel like I should be helping them. I mean, like, I don't feel like we should be making fun of them, because it kind of crosses the line between someone with mental disabilities. And so, I don't know.
Yeah, no, it is very insensitive.
Well, you know, you're forgetting the star gem of season two, guys. I mean, it kicked it off. I mean, forget the writer's strike. We don't even need stories. We could just dust off some, you know, phase two. You know, well, I guess we can't use the V'ger storyline because that was made into the motion picture. But the child, I mean, well, okay, maybe no. I don't think it's a good episode at all.
But it is a good segue for the next part. So let's talk about the...
That's what I was doing. I was making a good segue. That was my attempt.
You have a problem with children, Darren? Ian?
No.
Do you want Ian to die like Worf did, apparently, in the first 5 minutes?
Ian to die. No. Stop putting words in my mouth.
Philip, I like how you asked that question to the only one of us that has a child. So,
proof of life. Where is she, Darren?
But, you know, let's talk about, you know, even if season two is not your favorite, or is your favorite season, who knows? Maybe, you know, I think we can all agree that it doesn't hit the mark every single time. So let's talk about maybe some of the missteps. What pops out to me every single time.
Wait, what?
No. Don't. We are going to skip that episode because that gets its own topic.
Oh, yeah. Its own bullet.
Is actually
these are the voyages in Enterprise. We don't, you know, its own separate thing.
Is Wesley's first kiss episode, The Dolphin.
Oh, gosh. Did anyone ever read this as Dolphin?
Like, I think it every time.
I can't. It's like they're saying it wrong. But and this could be a great Cetacean Ops episode, but it was just a lie.
Did you ever read Joan of Arc? It's the same. Ah, you guys.
But, you know, it might not be the worst episode of all time, but the effect has always stuck with me. It is the cheesiest effect in all of Star Trek. I include the original series. I even include the animated series where they didn't even actually draw things. It was they didn't even try. Like the and I know this is whatever. It's late 1980s television, but the effect of when the woman, I can't remember her name, but she was in charge of protecting Wesley's new girlfriend.
The nurse. Yeah.
She transforms into an Ewok, you know, or whatever that thing was. And it takes me out of the entire thing. I just laugh at it every time. And I can't see past it. I can't do it.
And it reminds me of the Doctor's 50th, Doctor Who 50th anniversary, where the 10th Doctor is making out with this, you know, things with the sucky things, whatever. Which is what Wesley is doing. Like he's making out with this thing that in its original form, you know, I don't know. Take a listen from your uncle, Philip, kids. When you make out with that other person, they may be a shape-shifting species that looks nothing like a very pretty person.
Be careful.
Exactly. That's all I'm saying. There's a lot of life lessons in season two is all I'm saying.
So Philip, you know, I have a feeling I know what you're going to mention, but what about you? Are there any episodes that really kind of just you could skip over and be okay without?
Well, first for the Dolphin, that episode is all about the Riker Guinan scene. Tell me about my eyes.
Oh, that's great. Okay, that is a redeeming scene.
Exactly.
To that episode.
Okay, there are two episodes in season two that I'm still doing my rewatch, but I'm in season five, so I feel very comfortable with saying this. They're the worst episodes. And I'll say in all of TNG, because I don't know if I not feel safe saying in all of Star Trek. But
it's okay. It has ended TNG. Like, they're not going to make any more, so you can draw a line.
Don't say that, Darren!
I'll draw on the line here. It is Time Squared and Up the Long Ladder, which I would call it something else, but it's a family show.
Wait, Falling Down the Ladder?
Yeah. Okay, first I'll do Time Squared, because nothing happens. Nothing happens. Like, you know, every Star Trek series gets its mirror image of the captain episode, you know, Enemy Within. Voyager has, I can't remember the name of it, but the one where there's the two Voyagers and you get the two Janeways and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But we ruin the TNG one with two Picards because you have the one who doesn't talk or move, and the whole episode is just standing around waiting for it to happen. Like, that's the whole episode. Yeah, something from the future is going to happen. Better wait the whole 45 minutes to figure out what it is. And so it's just a horrible episode.
It's almost like they're trying to take that concept of, like, the high noon concept, like the clock on the wall, like, we're counting down to something, something's going to happen, but without a clock, and it didn't really work. Like, we're getting sucked into a vortex, maybe. I don't know.
A very pretty looking effect. That is literally the only thing that I can say about this episode.
Nice desktop wallpaper, exactly. But
well, you have to understand, Philip, the reason that Picard number two or Picard B doesn't get any lines is, you know, Patrick Stewart is a pretty famous voice, and it costs a lot of money to get him to actually say lines. So they just figured we can cut the
British tar.
It was season two Picard. He was still like low cost. Okay, and then because that's all it deserves to be said. Up the Long Ladder. It's just a horrible, horrible episode.
Don't be a racist, Wesley Phillips.
Oh, and I'll tell you why. Because for one thing, Picard, again, we don't see this until, or, you know, in season one, the neutral zone. This is the second time we're just like people beam aboard the Enterprise, and Picard's like, "Don't bother me. I got things to do. I don't care if these people are taking up half my ship, the clones and the stereotypes." I it's just, what can I say? Oh, and the way they solve the episode is by forcing a society to engage in polygamy And and they're like, well, that's, you know, Starfleet just dictated y'all marry each other. Well, our work here is done. Time to hit the old dusty trail.
I can forgive that. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think it's, you know, season one had a really racist episode, so we kind of had to follow it up maybe in season two. That's, again, that's hashtag bad continuity. But I forgive it because, and this is an extremely shallow reason, I'm absolutely in love with the woman in that episode. I think she's just, I don't know what it is.
She has a name, Dan.
I don't know what it is. I don't know. It doesn't matter. I just love her.
He's working his way up from the feet. He hasn't gotten to.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I'm just wondering how their society lasted. I mean, there had to be maybe 40, 50 people in that cargo bay. I mean, that's not a colony. That's like a school bus. So,
well, there were also pigs. Okay, and
I'm not counting the pigs. I'm counting the humans. But
and I just see like Chief O'Brien walking into the cargo bay and being like, "No, no, no, no,"
just
and then just walks out.
Just no. Strangely enough, he wasn't in this episode.
For probably ethical reasons, I'm not putting my name in this show. Next thing you know, some series will be asking me to dress up like a leprechaun.
Or have
In that episode, though, wasn't he?
I think he was.
Probably was.
They made a joke about scotch or whiskey or something. Anyways. Yeah,
how to get the real stuff.
I think that's
and then, as his heart died a little bit on the inside. But
Darren, what about you? Any episodes that you just, want to skip
over? Well, there's some that can't be named because they're a bullet point later in discussion. But, we've hit most of them. I think I just like to look at the good parts, really, in my TNG rewatch.
Well, here, Jen, I'll give you one. Icarus Factor.
Oh, gosh, yeah. It's just a terrible episode. I mean, you know, okay, it's the equivalent of, I've seen a lot of pictures people make where they're like, okay, so Data, you're like this first android, right, that we've ever seen, right? Yet there are definitely androids that look perfectly human in Kirk's time. It's the same as, wait, so this old guy just happens to be able to find a way to download his whole brain, like, into Data, and, like, we never touch on that again. I don't know. It's
Darren,
just,
that's the schizoid man, but that's all right.
Yeah. That's how much I hate the episode. I can't even keep it straight.
The schizoid man.
That's what I meant to say.
Well, the Icarus Factor is the the captain, or not captain, I guess, Father Riker episode.
He's not a priest.
Yeah.
No, he's definitely not a priest.
Father Riker, please bless me, for I have sinned on the holodeck on many occasions.
Because I know Daniel was pining for that Pulaski Needs a Romance episode.
Oh,
and here we get, you know, her hunk of Kyle Riker.
The most awkward conversation in 10 Forward ever. It's like, you know each other? Oh, yes, son, we do.
I love the turnabout, you know, on Will Riker. What? Dad, you were with women? What?
But, I mean, okay, the silver lining of that is the Ambujitsu match. I mean, it's not the greatest, but it's fun. It's a lot of
Where
fun.
Where is
I mean,
Chris Jones, who can tell us why this is a terrible part?
I also have a feeling that, I might be wrong, but I have a feeling American Gladiators was big around this time. I don't know what it is.
It was huge. You just need like Iceberg or whatever their names were to come in and be like, okay, man, let's get ready. I'm going to shoot the, it can't be a tennis ball gun. It's got to be a spheroid yellow launcher. You know, I mean, not everyone likes fencing. Oh, that's such a great show. But well, and you know, okay, to list one that hasn't been mentioned, not necessarily as a bad episode, but we do get to see our Riker replacement in The Outrageous O'Connor, a kind of direct, let's even almost use the exact same title from TOS. But yeah, I don't know.
You mean poor man's Han Solo? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, could we just have taken this actor and this character and just made him Chakotay? I'm just saying, like, you know, but I guess that's just replacing Riker.
Hey guys, you know what we should do in a Star Trek episode? I mean, we got this great Romeo and Juliet story, but we need a B story. What should we have? I know. How about if Data did an open mic? Wait, why are you writing it down?
No, I was being sarcastic. No, it's canon now. No!
Let's, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I think we've fallen down the ladder as far as we can go.
Oh, it's a long one.
Okay, guys, let's then talk about the elephant in the room. Depending on how you consider things, quite possibly the worst episode of Star Trek. If you even consider, I don't even consider it an episode. I skip it every time. I don't have any interest in watching. You know, of course, this is a direct result of the writer's strike. They said, you have to film an episode in like 3 days and you have to film it for half the budget. Go. And what we got, of course, what we got, Shades of Earl Grey. And of course, TV in the 80s and in the 90s, I think, maybe in the 70s, was a lot of TV did clip shows occasionally, you know. Usually not.
And they always worked out so well.
maybe not usually at the end of the second season where you don't have so many episodes to pull from. I actually do specifically
and a short
remember.
Second season.
That's right. A short second season. I do specifically remember the Saved by the Bell clip show, and I think that was actually pretty good. Of course, it had Kelly Kapowski in it, so I mean,
I think I remember the Family Matters clip show.
I think every show is
a clip. Every show had a clip show,
but
and they can be done well.
Dare to be different, Star Trek. Dare to be different. I mean, come on.
Do you guys ever watch this seriously? Like, do you ever sit through and watch all 42 minutes of this episode? I just don't know anybody that does that. Why would you do that?
I did. I mean,
I did too. I mean, just to refresh my blocking out.
Well, I will say this. I would rather watch Shades of Grey than The Royale.
Really? The Royale has Data in a cowboy hat.
And he rolls the dice and he snaps. I mean,
acting as much as not Data can be. Baby needs a new pair of shoes. Really? Really? That's Data?
I like that episode for the weirdness of it. Like, just like the total strange, like they go into this revolving door in the middle of like some planet that has Earth. I don't know. I just like it for that reason. It's so silly, but it's, you know, I don't hate that episode. I think
it's a Riker's dream.
Well, but on Shades of Grey, though, I mean, the B plot, like the actual plot of the episode, is not that bad. I mean, if it for some reason wasn't a clip show and it was just Riker kind of fighting for his life, and you have the whole, like, you have the, you know, unique alien and it's kind of got the infection, it's going up his legs, like the graphics on the screens, like showing the infection progressing are really cool. The cringe-worthy needles in your forehead, it was kind of cool. You know, Data taking a risk, like grabbing the vine, you know, that was kind of cool. So it had cool elements, but I don't know, maybe we just bash it too much because it's a clip show, but the backbone wasn't bad. It just, yeah.
And I will say this, actually, every time I go through and I get to that episode, I'll watch it until they start playing clips. And I get surprised every single time that it's like 15 minutes of actual episode before they start doing the clip thing. And then interspersed throughout the rest of the episode, there's 30 seconds of new footage and 10 minutes of clips. So I'll just stop watching as soon as they start showing clips. But, you know, you're right. There are cool elements, maybe not cool elements, but there are interesting elements that could have maybe supported its own episode, but it's just like you get to the clips and you're just like, come on, this is like, oh, remember all the great times we had? And it's like, no, I don't. There's been like 50
remember all the
so
bad
far.
Times we have, because apparently we got to focus on those too.
Yeah.
Oh, good. I have to watch again to consider what Will Riker thinks was the bad time.
Well,
it's
just,
like,
I guess
your dying was like the, you know, like, that was, it was okay. Okay.
Data, something's got me.
It was more about him. The part, yeah. I went to the molasses and tar and whatever.
Do you know how much we paid for that? Let's use that shot again.
Yeah. You know what? How much I suffered.
I always heard this story, and y'all probably too, of where you know, because Jonathan actually did that. Jonathan actually went into that whatever that goo was.
Goop, yeah.
And he said, like, when he went in there, like, LeVar Burton just went over there and said, "Frakes, I wouldn't have done that."
Like, that's why you're the commander, and I'm just a lieutenant junior grade.
Let me just take these contacts out.
They don't digitally pay me enough to do that.
All right, guys. Well, we've covered all the topics that I wanted to. Let's just do a quick recap. I mean, I know we kind of went over this in the beginning, but talking
it's
about
22 episodes, Daniel. How much can we recap?
Contagion.
We've covered almost
there,
everything.
I said it.
It's just.
I mean, what do you guys have? Has your opinions changed at all? Like, any closing thoughts? Anything that we might have missed? Philip, are you know you're still optimistic about it, but. How do you feel in closing?
I am. We didn't mention pen pals, but I know we talked about that last week with the Prime Directive. I would say again, this is always one of my defenses about the early seasons. If you're just going to be like, oh, blah, blah, there's lots of seeds planted that come to fruition, like Elementary Deer Data. We see Moriarty later. The Emissary.
That's true.
You know. The worst thing writers do is, like, we'll just introduce a kid, and that'll be fun. Yes, but when you introduce a kid, much like real life, you are then stuck with that kid until they grow up. So you just can't introduce a kid and have him go away a week later, much as Worf did. But you know, we do see a lot of changes. You know, we're still evolving as a series. You know, with all those changes we've mentioned, and there'll still be more changes to come in season three and beyond. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely a must-watch. You know, 75% quality, which is as much as you can ask for most seasons.
All right. And Darren, what about you?
Yeah, I think, you know, like Philip said, you know, focusing on the seeds that are planted. And I mean, like I kind of said, like I said in the beginning of this episode, this is much more reflective on the actual crew and the direction of the show that we see going forward. I mean, all the characters are kind of settled into more of their role. I mean, Geordi's the chief engineer, Worf's head of security, you know, you have more sets, and, you know, while I wouldn't exactly use Shades of Grey to introduce someone to Star Trek, just because it has a clip show and they'll catch a lot of episodes that way, I think that's a terrible idea, but it's actually a pretty decent season, and, you know, for all those popped collar haters that, you know, it's got to have a collar and a beard to be good, you know, like we've mentioned in season one, you know, there's some great episodes. I mean, can you imagine this season not being here and not having a Measure of a Man or a Matter of Honor or any of these great episodes? I think we'd lose a lot from the series.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. And as you were talking, and you were saying that all of our characters kind of settle into their established positions. I was thinking too. When I think of TNG, season two and season three, and part of season four have the established roster of, you know, Picard, Riker, and Troy in the center there, and then Worf on tactical, and Data and Wesley. At the front there, and that's, of course, like I said, we only get that in season two, season three, and the beginning of season four before Wesley leaves, and then it's just kind of round robin. Oh, hey, look, it's Ro. Oh, now it's somebody else. No, you know, whatever. But we get that core group, and we get that core dynamic established in season two, and so yeah, it's a very important season. I definitely see it as a transition season from the early kind of failings and. Maybe not failings, but misestablishment of season one to what we actually get later on in the series. And I think I'm a little bit more down on the season than you guys are, but I see the positives and I see what it leads to. And for that, I'm certainly grateful. And there are some really wonderful moments throughout most of the episodes. So, and I'm sure, you know, soon we'll be talking about season three, and that'll be interesting to see from, you know, how it moves forward. But season two of TNG is not the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM this week. So here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit. Montgomery Scott.
It's really just there to tell a story that they couldn't tell with Kirk or Spock or McCoy.
This is true. An episode where Kirk is framed for the murder of a hooker would be...
Right. Awesome.
Completely different. It would be awesome, but...
Earl Grey.
Ships of TNG Part 2.
Commander Riker, why would you protect the inferior ship? I want its treasure. I want the other ship.
Darren, how long have you been keeping that one in your pocket? You cannot tell us.
That was good.
Do a Ferengi. The Ready Room.
Scientific method.
She tells the woman that comes on the bridge, and she's like, "Well, it doesn't matter to me. I'm going to drive into these stars. It's going to be great." Like, it's like, I'm just like,
the orb.
Till death do us part.
His are very quizzical in nature. They're of the scientist. They're of the somebody who is willing to accept. Okay, what is this reality? What's going on? She's just all like, tell me what to do right now. You know, like,
she,
there's nothing spiritual about her.
To the journey!
One versus doctor's orders.
I was working full-time on top of being a full-time student, and I...
Listen, I don't want to hear your excuses, okay? I don't want to hear them.
Like, life was happening, and...
A great man once told me, if something's important to you, you make the time. Warp 5.
Undeveloped Enterprise stories.
But the idea here is that Porthos would become intelligent and would be the only member of the crew capable of communicating with a canine alien. So even Hoshi apparently couldn't figure out this dog language.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
If Bull, Chimera.
I'd love to see an X-Files one-shot with Scully and the hookers.
With Scully and the Hookers?
Yeah.
That's a great name for a band.
We can call it Scully and the Hookers.
Melodic Treks.
Five musical favorites.
You know, I don't completely hate the opening theme. I just really think that Archer's theme should be the opening credits.
Continuing Mission.
Star Trek Axelar with Alec Peters.
That's what we posit. We say it makes sense that at this point we know it's from TOS. They're not integrated, so our crews are not integrated, and we make a point of that. We don't avoid it. We make a point of it. And in Prelude to Axanar, they talk about that.
Literary Treks.
IDW Alien Spotlight Part 1.
Well, Chris, it's okay because they can see the Romulans from their house.
That's right.
So. From space, you know, you betcha. You know what? That's okay. I can see the Romulans from my starship. It's gonna be fine.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor, who helps us bring Earl Grey to you each week. And our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all of the books you've always wanted to read, but never thought you'd have time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from and new titles coming every week, from classics to current bestsellers and even some of the most famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive, Federation, and Spock's World, not to be confused with Spock's Brain. Audible has something for everyone. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. So give it a try today. Catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read, and that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting Earl Grey and all of Trek FM. And you can also directly help us keep Earl Grey coming to you each week, and that is by adopting some aliens. Well, illustrations anyway. If you go to trekfm/donate, you'll find 8 original alien illustrations by Tobu Ushi, who does most of the artwork that you will see on our website. They're available as both badges and art prints, and there are different contribution levels for you to choose from. Just let us know which one you would like in which format. Again, you'll find them at trekfm/donate, and your support helps us pay for the cost of production, hosting, and bandwidth that's needed to bring the show and the network to you each week. All right, guys. Well, this has been fun. This is, for the people that are listening in their cars or, you know, on their way to work or maybe they're running. I don't know. Whatever they're doing. This is actually a live episode of Earl Grey. So I want to thank everybody that stopped by to check it out.
Thank you, seven viewers. We love you.
I thought it was going to be seven of nine viewers.
And if anybody needed to get a hold of you guys on the internets, where, how would they do that? Philip, how would they get a hold of you?
Well, I've been trying to set up the Ready Room, recorder to show clips, just like Shades of Grey. So anytime I want to watch a season in 5 seconds, I can do it. But they can find me on the Battle Bridge on Twitter at NC Public Servant, and that's NC like North Carolina.
And what about you, Darren?
They can find me on Twitter under the username Dr. Sci-Fi. That's DrSciFi. And if they're interested in sci-fi in general, I also have a podcast called The Dr. Sci-Fi Show that comes out every Friday, where we talk about, you know, different topic each month. This month we're talking about toys, so Ninja Turtles and Power Rangers and all that good stuff. So it's a lot of fun.
And if anybody wanted to get a hold of me on Twitter, would be the best way as well. I am 1UpDan, and that is the number one, not the word. All right, guys. Well, I'm going to travel down to this planet. I hear that the local plant life can be a little dangerous, so I hope I don't have hallucinations about the first 30 episodes of Earl Grey. But I'm going to go try anyways. So I guess we will all catch you next week on Earl Grey. Engage.
Make it so.
Live long and prosper.
Fire.